You're listening to the Simply Lived In podcast, episode number 2. Today, the incredible Courtney Carver will speak about the importance of avoiding busyness in your life, allowing your story to unfold in its own time, and trusting yourself about what you need.
You're listening to the Simply Lived In podcast, where we understand that needing less helps us to be so much more. Entrepreneur and sustainability advocate, Meg Ross, will help you to break down how to create more space in your life. Get ready to hear from strong women who are redefining what living well looks like. If you've dreamed of being present, cutting the clutter, and putting an end to the busyness, this is the place to be. Here's your host, designer, motivator, and simplicity enthusiast, Meg Ross.
Hello, Simply Friends. I can't contain my excitement that Courtney Carver is here with us today. Courtney is one of the first bloggers to tackle the power of simplicity. She has shown readers and followers how important simplicity is to improving our health, building more meaningful relationships, and relieving stress in our lives.
Thank you so much for being here with us today. Reading your book and hearing you speak is what first opened my eyes to living more simply. So it means so much that you're here to help me kick off this podcast.
I'm thrilled. Thanks for inviting me.
Of course. So you launched your blog, Be More With Less, in 2010. And now you're one of the top bloggers in the world on the subject of minimalism. You recently published your book about your path towards simplicity, which I love mostly for how honest and clear a reflection it is of your journey. So could you tell us a little bit more about your journey towards a soulful simplicity and why you are called to share it?
Sure. And thanks for those very kind words. That's my hope, that I am always as honest and transparent as I can be, because sometimes I think on the internet, you read someone's story and it seems like it only took a day or a week. But I think we all know that all big change takes a really long time. And that was definitely my experience. This kind of goes back all the way to 2006 and probably long before then, when I started to feel really just like something wasn't right. I didn't know what it was, but I didn't really feel great about the trajectory of my life, but kind of felt like I was stuck in it. And I was so good at running on autopilot that I just kept going and going and overextending myself in really every area of my life, from, you know, work to money to energy. And all of that kind of came to a screeching halt in the summer of 2006 after months of debilitating fatigue and vertigo and some other really weird symptoms. I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And for me, that was the wake-up call I couldn't ignore. You know, even though I had other wake-up calls, those were easy to brush under the rug and keep on going because I didn't really have time to pay attention to them. But this was different. And I never thought I would say that I am grateful to have MS or to get that diagnosis, but I definitely am, because it gave me this opportunity to reassess, to step back, and to start asking questions of myself instead of just going, going, going.
Yeah, that is really inspiring how you did see you had this illness, a wake-up call in your life, and you chose to take advantage of it and make it a positive opportunity for change. I think a lot of people are faced with, especially illness today, you can either kind of hide under the scariness of that, or you can kind of say, look, here's where I am, and this is an opportunity that I have. So I think that's so inspiring, especially that you decided to share your story, because I think so many people can benefit from hearing it. And now lives that you've impacted are also influencing other people. And it's amazing how a message of love can spread.
I love to hear that. And I should say, though, that I wasn't ready at first to share my story. It took several years of me really figuring things out. And still today, you know, I've got this wonderful opportunity to share whatever is happening to me. But often the worst time to share something is while it's happening, you know, when you're in the thick of it, when you are trying to figure it out. So I try to give myself all the time and space I need to process and really think about what is the message that is coming from this, because it's not always what it seems. I think you have to give kind of marinate in things and let them reveal themselves before sharing, because if you share too soon, I think you almost compromise your own experience and don't get to see it through.
Yes, I completely agree with that. Something that I heard recently that what you just said reminded me of is, if you can clearly see the path, then it's not your path. Because exactly like you said, when something is happening to you, you can't fully see it for what it is, because all you have are the little pieces that are in front of you.
Yeah, that's a great one. And even when you have full clarity on things, the path is never completely clear. You have to keep walking it.
Yes, that is so true. So something else that you really opened my eyes to was the concept of busyness and how in today's society, many of us use our busyness to prove our worth. And I really think that's something that I know I was struggling with, and I know a lot of my friends are even still struggling with. And it's something that I didn't notice, and now it's hard to not notice. So something that I struggle with, and I would like your perspective on this, is knowing if I've done enough in regards to my work, especially as an entrepreneur, because we don't have a manager saying, you've done enough, or good job, or you get this reward. So how have you struck the balance of creating a successful business without relying on busyness?
Yeah, I think the very first thing I did is decide that I wasn't going to measure who I was by what I accomplished. I had to change the measuring system, because forever I would really measure every single day based on my calendar or my to-do list. So at the end of the day, if I didn't have enough check marks, I didn't have enough appointments, I didn't log enough time or make enough money, then I felt like crap about myself. And I realized there are many other ways to measure if you must measure. But even if I had done nothing that day, I was still me, and that was enough. So the second part of the question is really, if I'm understanding it right, is, you know, how do you make a business successful on your own without killing yourself? Because mm-hmm. Even aside from the whole measuring thing, you know, we want our work to be successful, and we logically think if we put more time, energy, attention into it, it will flourish. But oftentimes I find now that when I pull back and when I give it a little bit of space and when I have room to breathe, and take a walk in between appointments, or get on my yoga mat in the morning, or all the things I neglected for a long time because I thought, you know, more and more, I got to do more and more and more to make something happen. But giving your work some breathing room really helps. It helps you to be more attentive. It helps you to notice things. It helps you to be curious and to think about what you want to do next and how you want to do it, instead of just this constant, like, okay, now I have to check email for an hour, and then I have to do Twitter for an hour, and then I have to write 42 blog posts, and then I have to whatever's next. It's not all going to happen today. And if it does, your work will suffer, as will your health at some point.
Yes, I agree with that. And just making time for things so you can be creative. I think, like I mentioned, I think it's admirable that you've found this balance, and I'm assuming it's not something that's super easy every single day, and everything looks different every day. And a big theme of yours that I like is just kind of trusting yourself and starting to listen to yourself and what you actually need.
Definitely. And you're absolutely right. It's not the same every day, and some days it is kind of a disaster, and other days it's really great. When it comes to creative flow, that's not something you get to dictate. You can do everything in your power to encourage it and foster it, but some days it's there and some days it's not. And so you have to shift gears and do things a different way. I think sometimes you don't know, or it's hard to trust yourself, or especially if you've been working for, you know, a company with set guidelines and rules for a long time, and then you go out on your own, you're really forging a new path and trying to figure out what is best for you. And I just always recommend resisting that comparison. Like, well, if I was at this company, I would do it this way, or this is how so-and-so does it. Really resist that and try to see what works best for you.
Yes, I agree. Comparison is such an easy thing to do, but I agree, it is not self-serving.
Yeah, it's more measuring, right? We are so desperate to measure ourselves against something, and to what end? I don't know.
Yes. One of my favorite quotes of yours is, instead of working so hard to make ends meet, focus on having fewer ends. And I think this creates such an amazing visual that I was really able to relate with. And I think that's true for a lot of people. So can you share a little bit about how you realized this, and what steps did you have to take first to actually have less ends in your life?
Yeah, this was a big shift for me because it felt like for a long time, especially when I was really deep in debt, that's kind of where this idea came from. I was always trying to make ends meet. You know, what am I going to do to make this paycheck last for 2 full weeks? How am I going to give the credit card companies enough? How am I going to pay the rent? It was always, you know, very tight, very focused on just making the ends meet. And then I realized that the ends weren't just money, but they were things like sleep and food and how I spent my time and how I did my work and who I spent time with. All these little ends that I was trying to stretch and tie into this perfect bow at every corner. And it was exhausting. It was exhausting. And so when I started to pay down my debt and cut up my credit cards, I realized that's one less end I ever have to worry about. What would it look like if I had fewer ends in other areas of my life? So less to tie up, less to focus on, less to worry about. And that strategy, even today, has really, it just continues to serve me. You know, if I'm feeling overwhelmed, I think maybe I need fewer ends. What do I have going on? What can I let go of? You know, maybe I don't have to make it meet. Maybe I don't have to wrap it up. Maybe I can just let it go.
Yes, I love that. And something else you say that I really like is to get clear on what matters, you have to get rid of everything that doesn't. And I think I really like that. I think it's a little more of a broad brush to paint, whereas I really like when you speak about having less ends. I mean, that's a pretty actionable statement, you know? Like there are, like you said, you can cut up your credit cards, even though I'm sure that's obviously not an easy step to take, but even just with the things we surround ourselves with, you know, you can having less ends is something that everybody can do if they try.
Definitely. And it may not be easy. I mean, none of this may be easy, but it's only not easy for a little while. And then things get lighter. Things do feel easier. Things do feel simpler. So I think always that's a great reminder. You know, it might not be easy, but it's only going to not be easy for a little while.
Yes. And something specifically that you did to help you have less ends was your minimalist fashion challenge, Project 333. And so the challenge was to dress with 33 items or less for 3 months. And there's a bit in your book that I liked about someone from Vogue said that the project was severe and not for most people. And you you responded in your book by saying, and I'll just quote you here because I love it, we're spending money we don't have on clothing we don't want. We always assess our value with our jean size and our self-worth, not our our net worth. And the fast fashion industry is severe. And I really like that point about those are severe things, and really having less clothing isn't that severe. So can you just explain a little bit, first of all, what made you do the 333 challenge in the first place, and then the impact that it made on your life, and if it was what you expected or not what you expected?
Yeah, I started it in 2010 just as a way to kind of clear the closet chaos and start to figure out what enough meant to me, because I clearly had no concept of that when it came to the closet. I just kept adding and adding and adding, like shopping. I mean, probably on a weekly basis, I would pick something up. I don't know for certain, but I doubt a week went by where I didn't pick up a new scarf or a new pair of earrings or boots or something to add to my wardrobe. And it just kept building and building. And then when things weren't working, I would just put them in a box and shove the box somewhere, or, you know, the closet would get really cramped. And so I just kept asking myself, you know, what is enough? How much do I really need here in the closet? And I thought a challenge might be interesting and give me some answers. And so I, as you said, I challenged myself to dress with 33 items or less for 3 months, including clothing, accessories, jewelry, and shoes. And I mean, it's been more than 8 years and I still typically dress with 33 items or less every 3 months because it was that powerful. Not only did I figure out that I didn't enjoy most of the clothing that I had, and I saved money and time, I also got really clear on things because I wasn't having that decision fatigue every day of what am I going to wear? Does this look right? Should I change? You know, going through different outfits all day long, leaving that behind was very freeing. It was also wonderful to discover that nobody really noticed. So when I started this, I was working full time and no one noticed that I was dressing with the same clothes over and over again. And that was a real eye opener for me because forever I used to try to prove who I was by what I wore. You know, in addition to my busyness, I was like, I have to prove myself by wearing certain things into certain places. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't me. I was like playing dress up all the time, I felt like. So that was a great lesson within that. And then the other great thing is that the challenge really resonated with people. And in the very beginning, 100 people tried it at the same time as I did. And then now, I mean, tens of thousands of people from all over the world have done it and discovered things far beyond what I did. I mean, things like a reduction in depression and anxiety, for instance, which of course I never dreamed that would be part of the experience, but it just really demonstrates the power of less. I mean, not just in our closets, but in other areas of our lives. And not that less is nothing. I don't think we need to own no things, but not overwhelming ourselves with needless things.
Yes, I really like your point about our relationship with our things and that it really looks different for everyone and how you can beautifully curate a closet, you know, intentionally with clothing that you love and how that can make you feel, you know, worthy and give you this means by which to help you go about your day. But that also you have to find that balance of not putting emotions or expectations onto your things.
For sure. I mean, think about that when we buy things. I mean, we do it for a few different reasons. Sometimes it's because we actually need something, but more often than not, it's because we think it's going to change us in some way, or it's going to make us happier or more successful or ease a little bit of the pain that we're experiencing, something. We want a quick fix.
Yes.
And for some people, that's food. For some people, that's alcohol or drugs. For other people, it's shopping. And I mean, I know, and ask anyone who has tried to shop their way out of pain, it just doesn't work. It doesn't last. It may delay the pain, but it doesn't, you don't get to escape it.
Yes, that's so true. You talk about simplicity as being something that you're always working towards and that it's really in the choices that you make every day. You don't just reach a point where suddenly you're a minimalist and simplicity looks different for everyone. Can you share some of the smaller everyday choices that you continue to make to live out your life like you want?
Sure. So in the beginning, for me, this was never about creating a simple life. It was about reducing stress, getting rid of stress so that I could live well with MS. And so I really stay focused on that you know, keeping the stress levels low or non-existent where I can, through my daily habits, which also lend to my intention of living more simply now. And so, for instance, I practice a morning routine every day, no matter what, even if I am traveling or something is going on where I don't have a lot of time, I'll practice for 5 minutes if I can't practice for an hour or two, like I would prefer to do, just to stay connected to that routine. Mm-hmm. And in that morning routine, I do a little bit of writing, a little yoga, some walking, sometimes some reading, just things that I really love. You know, they might not be right for everyone, but things that really fuel me, that fuel my body, that fuel my heart, that keep me, I guess, moving through the day with some intention instead of just bouncing from thing to thing to thing, which this world can make it so easy to do. So yeah, I think morning routine is probably the most important for me. I try to always have some connection with my husband and daughter. Again, even if I'm traveling, whether it be a text message or a phone call, you know, hearing their voice really means a lot to me and also to them. And we spend a lot of time together when we're all in the same state. But if we're not, then we definitely try to keep that, even if it's just for a short time, that daily contact. So things like that, sleeping really well, that helps me manage stress and reduce a lot of stress, both in my body and around my body, you know, with my environment. So yeah, those are probably the main things, but I always think consistency over intensity. Like, so what if you can't do it for a full hour? Do it for 5 minutes.
Yes, I started meditating, which I'm really proud of myself for. Meditation seemed, I've always done yoga and enjoyed yoga, but for some reason, the idea of meditating just seemed so intimidating for me. So I have the app Headspace now, and I've been meditating for 5 minutes every morning. And like you said, it's something that I'm actually able to be consistent with. And so even though I only do it for such a short time and it's a practice that I'd really like to build on, it is something that I've maintained and I've noticed a difference in my clarity as I go through the day.
I love Headspace. Do you notice too that those 5 minutes aren't quite as uncomfortable now as they were on the first day?
Yes, completely.
It's so interesting. And I think when we realize that, when we see that we can train our brain a little bit to be still, to be in the moment, we can use that power throughout the day during other things. Like, oh yeah, we can pay attention to a conversation without having to check our phone or think about our to-do list. We can stay fully engaged for a few minutes, but we have to think about that. It doesn't come naturally.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't come naturally, but I definitely agree. It's something that you can use in other aspects of life, and it's pretty amazing, really. One last question I have for you is, do you notice a difference in the relationship that younger people have with their stuff than previous generations? So I'm 24 and I've spoken with some of my friends, and obviously every person is different, but I've had a few conversations with people now where it seems that the priorities of, I hate to say the millennial, but the younger person is a little bit different than maybe that of their parents or grandparents.
Definitely. I think 100%. And again, not for everyone. It's hard to say all millennials or all of any particular generation, but for the most part, and I have a daughter who is 22, experiences are the priority. Lifestyle is the priority. It's not about collecting stuff. Yes, some stuff is important to you, I'm sure, as is my daughter and other people in that age range. But I don't think they are the collectors that their parents or grandparents are.
Yes. And that's an interesting, I'm glad that you have seen that too. I think it's kind of a positive outlook just to see that maybe you know, people are relying less on the things and more on love and experiences. I think that's the right direction to be moving in.
I think so too. I mean, I definitely hope so. I think that, I mean, you guys obviously have a whole different thing to deal with than I did when I was your age, where, you know, I didn't have a cell phone until my late 20s. And there was no social media or that I knew of. That entire technology world is such a huge facet of life now that I'm grateful that I didn't have to deal with it then. I'm glad that I went through my college days without Facebook or any digital reminder of all the things.
Right.
So I don't know. I think, you know, there, you have other quote unquote stuff to deal with versus the physical stuff, the clutter as much. But also an interesting part of that is a lot of the parents and grandparents want to give their kids their stuff. Mm-hmm. Or they've been holding on to the kids' stuff for a really long time and want to pass that down, and the kids don't want the stuff. I hear from both sides, you know, what should I do with these things I'm holding on to my kids? And then the kids are saying, how do I tell my parents I don't want their stuff? So it's a really interesting place.
Yes, I agree. So if people are interested in what we're talking about and want to know more about you and your journey, they can visit your blog, Be More With Less, and also check out your book, Soulful Simplicity.
That's right. Thank you.
Yeah. So I'm, again, thank you so much for talking with us. And I am so excited to share this with other people so that they can be just as on board as I am with just exploring different ways to live their lives with more intention.
I love that.
Thanks for listening to the Simply Lived In podcast. Dive into show notes for this episode and all past episodes at simplylivedinpodcast.com. If you love the show, please share with your friends. Help us to spread the power of simplicity. Thanks for listening, and until next time, keep up your quest